Welcome to the ABCs of Rock podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Schuer. The ABCs of Rock is proudly part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. I thank you for tuning into this podcast each and every week. Throughout the season, I'll be progressing my way through the alphabet from A to Z, where I'll be featuring bands or musicians going in alphabetical order, no exception. It's not only been a blast, it's also been an education, and I'm having the time of my life. Before I begin, I must say a couple very important words about this podcast. I do not own the rights to any of the music played on this show. The musicians or the music labels own the copyright. I play this music under the doctrine of fair use. I am not here as a DJ, but to offer music commentary and criticism. My goal is for you to gain a larger appreciation for the bands or the musicians in the music played here on this podcast, and I can't emphasize this enough. Please, please go out and legally purchase or stream their music. The musicians need your support. My only goal is that I hope this show contributes to spreading the good word about the bands you hear on these episodes. I do not profit in any way from this podcast. It is truly done out of my pure love of the music. So I do have to apologize. I did miss a week of the podcast, and it was basically due to my insane schedule these days. I don't talk about my work that much, but what I do is I run a cable station. I'm the director of the Westin Media Center, and I'll tell you, work has been busy. And I'm not going to get too much into it, but I just have not had the opportunity to sit down and write and record this episode. But I've finally been plugging away at it a little bit over the last week and a half, and here I am. And the other thing I do regret is that my daughter Chloe is not here. I really wanted her to be part of this episode, but in order for me to get this episode out in time, I'm going to record this one solo. But I promise I will get her on a show soon. And it's breaking her heart that she hasn't been able to do one with me yet this season. But there will be lots of opportunities, I told her, for her to join me. So it's coming soon. Well, anyways, I want to just acknowledge this week's episode is going to be about Pat Benatar. And if you heard the opening act, as I've been calling the song that opens up the episode, you heard the song Just Like Me from Pat Benatar's album Precious Time, one of the great ones from her early career. Well, as you can guess, we're moving on to letter B this week. And it came down, actually, to two musicians that I was debating against. Obviously, I went with Pat Benatar, but I was so close with going with Blondie, which is ironic because these two women of rock get compared to each other, Deborah Harry, of course, and Pat Benatar. But obviously, you're here because I chose Pat Benatar. But I do hope to do a Blondie episode someday. They truly are one of my favorite bands. Before I begin, I do like to start off a little bit about how I got into the music and Pat Benatar specifically, and a little background on the band just a little bit, just to give a little context. I've mentioned this dozens of times already, but I grew up as an 80s child and was constantly glued to MTV in the early 80s, wasting many, many hours of my life waiting for my favorite music videos to be shown. Of course, I was exposed to Pat Benatar at an age when her music and her videos were everywhere back then. The videos for You Better Run, Shadows of the Night, We Belong, and of course, Love is a Battlefield were part of the foundation of my childhood. When I was around 8 or 9, her album Get Nervous was one of the very first albums I got on cassette tape. So I was all in with Pat Benatar in my youth. But as much as I thought I appreciated her music as a kid, I really wasn't a giant fan in the scope of her career as I grew older. My interest in her music was fleeting for just a couple of years. It wasn't until probably after college that I went back and really got into those early albums, which I now feel are classics, those being In the Heat of the Night, Crimes of Passion, and Precious Time. Those three albums everyone should own. I followed her career from a distance, though, as she put out newer material, mostly because I found it to be inconsistent and so much of a departure from those early albums that I loved, at least so I thought. But over the years, I've reacquainted myself with her entire catalog, and although I still don't think of her later career, I still don't think her later career ever matched the quality of the songs from those first three albums. There is still so much from those later albums that I do love, and I want to bring attention to this audience here. And that's what I'm going to be doing today. Now, obviously, if you're tuning into this, either A, you're a diehard Pat Benatar fan, and the music that I'm going to play here today, you're already familiar with. Now, if what you might not know is, if you're a first-time listener, is I don't play hits here. I will be playing music, but it's not going to be anything obvious. It's not going to be anything off of the greatest hits. It's not going to be singles. I want to dig deep into her catalog of music and curate some of the album cuts that went under the radar that I think are just as good as her singles that I absolutely adore. So that's what I'm going to be doing here today, going through her entire discography, album by album, through her career in chronological order, and finding music that I think needs to be celebrated by Pat Benatar. So I hope you are going to enjoy this journey. And for those of you who maybe are just a casual fan, and I think there are a lot of you out there who are familiar with a handful of her hits and really maybe only think of her for those like 4, 5, or 6 songs that get rotated on classic rock radio. But you're going to be in for a surprise, and I think you're really going to enjoy this because there's so much really good music that she put out. It is scattered about, though. I can't really point to one album probably post like her peak career that I say that is the one you have to get. Because there isn't an album that I say is a must own besides those first three. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some diehard Benatar fans that are screaming at their speaker right now. But I am a Pat Benatar fan, but I would not say that I love everything that she puts out. There are plenty of songs that are not my jam. I will admit right now, when it comes to Pat Benatar's music, I love the rockers. I am not into her music when she does the ballads and the soft rock aspect of her those types of songs. It's really not my cup of tea. So I will be focusing basically on the ones that really get the blood pumping. And that's the way I want my Pat Benatar. So here we go. You know, first, though, I must say that I think it's wonderful what's happening now, over at least the last maybe 15, 20 years, is that it's not just Pat Benatar that is getting the recognition, but it's also her husband and lead guitarist, Neil Giraldo, who, when they tour now, it's a double bill. And I think that's awesome because Neil is as big of part of the sound of Pat's music as Pat herself. Pat is one of the greatest rock and roll vocalists, female vocalists and rock and roll vocalists of all time. But Neil flew so far under the radar to the point where throughout the 80s, he was never really talked about. You know, yeah, he was like the lead guitarist, but, you know, and they were married, but like it was always about Pat as the star of the show. And, you know, I don't even think I knew who Neil Giraldo was for decades. And then I started seeing them touring maybe like 15, 18 years ago. And I started seeing like Pat Benatar with Neil Giraldo. I'm like, who's Neil Giraldo? And of course, you know, I was kind of naive back then. And then I figured out pretty quickly that, oh, this was her husband and guitarist. And like, then I realized, oh, you know, Neil did the primary songwriting for them and in the song composition. So he is a huge part. And not only that, he is an amazing guitarist. So Pat also had the talent as a vocalist, but also was so fortunate to have such a talented songwriter and guitarist, you know, by her side throughout her career. So what a tandem they are. So as we go through this, we're celebrating both Neil and Pat on this episode. So anyways, let's get going on this. So it all starts back in 1979 when Pat Benatar and her future husband, guitarist Neil Giraldo, and company put out their first record, In the Heat of the Night, which contained their hard rock breakthrough hit, Heartbreaker, a song that would lay the foundation of their entire career. This is still my favorite Pat Benatar album and establishes her signature sound right out of the gate. This album came out on August 27th of 1979. It was produced by Peter Coleman and Mike Chapman. And this one went platinum and got as high as number 12 on the U.S. Billboard 200. And there's so many songs in here that I love. And I actually had a hard time picking just the one song. You know, there's so many highlights. There's obviously, Heartbreaker is one of the best songs ever. But if it's an album of mostly covers, you know, which is interesting. And I want to shine a light on a couple of the originals before ultimately getting to the one that I'm going to play, which is actually a cover, though. But both So Sincere and My Clone Sleeps Alone were co-written by Pat Benatar. The only two songs on here that credits her as a songwriter. They are both amazing songs and probably in my top 10 favorite songs of hers. But I'm doing my best to cover her entire discography today. So I got to take one track from this album, and it's going to be one of her greatest pure hard rock songs she's ever laid vocals on. And that song is No You Don't. Her delivery is raw and full of ferocity. And in my mind, this song represents the epitome of the rock and roll dream queen. This song was originally performed by British glam rockers Sweet, which was on the 1974 album Desolation Boulevard, which is one of the best records from the mid-70s. Definitely check that one out. That one also has the great song Fox on the Run on it. Sweet is one of the great forgotten bands. So I digress. What I also do on these episodes is I love to quote part of the lyrics for each song. So if you're new to the show, you're going to be scratching your head, what is this nut job doing here? But I will quote part of the lyrics, and I usually do it in the most deadpan, horrible way possible. And it's just what I do, you know, so get used to it. So this is from the second verse, and here we go. You keep playing your reckless games that will bring you fame, but I'll take the blame for your name. Well, you think you've got my life in your hands, but you don't understand that I've got my own plans, my own plans.
Now and then I get tired of the sound of you putting
All right, fantastic way to start the episode. We're going to move on to her second LP titled Crimes of Passion, which came out on August 5th of 1980. It was produced by Keith Olsen. Also came on Chrysalis Records, which was the record label that would that Pat would be on for a long time. This one was, I believe, her biggest selling record of all time. It was 4 times platinum and went as high as number 2 on the U.S. Billboard charts. This album was her big breakthrough, of course. It included the smash hit Hit Me With Your Best Shot and a couple other singles that were great, You Better Run and Treat Me Right. The song I'm going to pick off this, and again, there's so many great songs in this one, but I love the song Hell Is For Children. It was written by Neil Giraldo and Pat Benatar and Roger Capps. This is a great hard rock song. It's a song that at the time was misunderstood by many groups due to the title. There were Christian groups that thought the song was evil and satanic, when it couldn't be further from the truth. The song was written in protest of all the child abuse that she was reading about at the time. It's a plea to raise awareness of the victims of this abuse. I love the journey this song takes. It begins mid-tempo, almost as a ballad even, and it's easy to dismiss it as filler almost. But each time the chorus comes back, Pat thrusts more and more energy into it until it ends with this guttural vocal performance. It also includes a blistering guitar solo in there. I wish the mix was a little different so that Neil's guitar was a little more in the forefront of the mix, but he does a hell of a job in this one. Overall, musically, one of the greatest hard rock songs from her catalog. I love it. So I got to go with the chorus on this one. Pat's, you know, really pure guttural scream at the end, in my opinion, is probably the most gripping moment of her entire vocal career. So, I mean, I just got to go with this, and it's going to be really fast. It's hell. Hell is for hell. Hell is for hell. Hell is for children. That song just gives me goosebumps. It's just so raw, full of energy. All right, moving on to her third release, titled Precious Time, which came out on July 6th of 1981. It was produced by Keith Olsen and Neil Giraldo. This one went double platinum, but it did go to number one on the U.S. Billboard charts. So this was her first and only number one album. But it didn't have the same strong singles as the last album, but in my opinion, it's really just as consistent. The song I'm going to go with is the title track, Precious Time, which was written by Billy Steinberg. Billy has put together an impressive songwriting career, penning some huge hit songs in the 80s and 90s. He wrote songs for Madonna, Cyndi Lauper, Whitney Houston, and The Pretenders. This one has another incredible guitar solo from Neil Giraldo. And man, I miss the days of guitar solos. It allowed the artist to stretch out the song and experiment, and guitarists like Neil always made the most of it. This song establishes an incredible mid-tempo groove that locks in on the theme and doesn't let go. And Pat's vocals on this are just spine-tingling. We're going to go with the second verse on this one, and this is a big second verse, so hold on. Here we go. You were on a liquid diet. You were sure you had to try it, and you lost all your pounds. The doctor's on vacation, so you took the medication and wound up lost and found. So we took a trip to Paris because you swore that it would scare us out of our swift decline. And I remember about those days in September is the Merci and the wine.
I don't wanna argue about who
All right, that was Precious Time. Fantastic song. All right, we are going to move on. And onto the fourth album in her catalog, which was titled Get Nervous, which came out on October 29th of 1982. It was produced by Neil Giraldo and Peter Coleman. This one went platinum and went as high as number 4 on the U.S. Billboard. So on this one, Pat started expanding her sound a little bit on this album with some elements of new wave and a bit of a departure from hard rock. The biggest example of this is the song Anxiety, Get Nervous. You can hear throughout the album, though, that the band is more into keyboards. It was obviously a conscious decision since previously it was Neil Giraldo who would perform the keyboards during recording on the previous albums. But for this album, they brought in an experienced keyboardist, Charlie Giordano, who you may know is the current member of the E Street Band, replacing original keyboardist Danny Federici. Song I'm going to pick from this one is The Victim. The Victim was written by Neil Giraldo and Billy Steinberg again. It's an aggressive and straightforward rock and roll song with smashing guitars and some of the best drumming on any Benatar song from Myron Grombacher. Someone tell me. I don't know. I think this is the first album that Pat put out that doesn't include any covers. I mean, from what I can tell, 6 of the 10 songs were written by band members, and the rest were contributions from professional songwriters, I guess. They were getting more creative control over what they were recording, which was cool, I guess. It has an infectious guitar performance from Giraldo, which kind of becomes this great musical interlude a little more than halfway through the song. So I think you're going to dig this one. And I'm going to go with the chorus for this song. You've got a burning desire to be the victim. You're bleeding from the soul. You're hurting from the heart. Things you can't be told are going to tear you apart.
Perfect.
That was The Victim. We are going to jump ahead a little bit here because during this period of Pat's career, she put out an album, well, actually a couple albums, which I'm not going to pick any music from. She put out an album titled Tropico, which I suppose I will acknowledge, since I'm not selecting any music off of it, I'm not a fan of this record. Pat took her music into the direction of soft rock and pop rock, and it simply doesn't work for me. It did have a very big hit, We Belong, which I won't deny is Pat in peak form. But there really isn't anything else that is in my wheelhouse. Like I said before, I love it when Pat goes all in on her hard rock roots. Also around this time, she had a huge single, Love is a Battlefield. It doesn't end up on a studio release, though. It's on a live album that came out around this time as an additional single, as a studio cut. So, all the live tracks are good, but, you know, I'm going to focus on the studio albums here. So, I'm just going to move on. And that brings us to her next album titled Seven the Hard Way, which came out on October 30th, 1985. It was produced by Neil Giraldo, Joe, I'm going to screw this name up, Ciccarelli, and Mike Chapman. This one went gold and only went up to number 26 on the U.S. Billboard charts. Seven the Hard Way was kind of a return to the sound of her previous success in the early 80s, but it was a very troubled time for Pat and Neil at this part of their career. They had recently had their first child, and they really weren't in the frame of mind to make this record. But they were under contract, and they were forced to do so and by the record label. And in retrospect, they both admitted that they just really disliked this album. They were not happy with it. That said, there are a couple songs on here which are worthy and are solid. So one of them I think is pretty good that I'm going to play here, and it is titled Red Vision. It was written by Neil Giraldo and Myron Grombacher. Grombacher? I'm going to keep screwing this up until someday. I don't know. This song has an interesting industrial undertone to the song, which I find to be a kind of a fun quality, a new quality, and unique to her catalog of music. So I think you guys might dig this one if you're not familiar with it. I am going to go with one of the verses on this. So here we go. Hate shines like burning bridges in your eyes. In love and war, we stand alone. Trust in nothing but our own red vision.
Oh, again, I walk the chords. Tiptoe through the minefield of your soul. So I've come to take you home.
That was Red Vision. Before I move on, I just want to take a brief moment since we're halfway through the episode and thank you once again for tuning into the show and say how much I appreciate each and every one of you for being a loyal listener or subscriber to my podcast. Also, if you've been listening to these episodes, I'd love to hear from you. There's an email I check frequently, abcofrockpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can find me on social media on Facebook at abcofrockpodcast and on Twitter at abcrockpodcast. This show is available on dozens of podcast apps. So please, if you love the show, subscribe and give it a rating and review on whatever app you prefer. Those ratings and reviews actually play a large role with the algorithms that help raise the profile of the show and make it more discoverable for a larger audience. I thank you all in advance. So we're going to move on to the seventh studio album, which is titled Wide Awake in Dreamland, which came out on July 22nd of 1988. It was produced by Peter Coleman, Neil Giraldo, and Keith Forsey. This one went gold. It went up to number 20 in the U.S. Billboard charts. It actually is also the last album in her career that went at least gold. After this, they never had anything that go higher than gold. Or even hit gold, I should say. Overall, I feel this is her strongest album since Get Nervous. This was probably the album that she and Neil wish they put out as a follow-up to Tropico. You can tell, though, that the music is developing. It's more mature sounding and has a more tempered feel to it. There are several solid tracks I really like on here, such as Let's Stay Together and Too Long Soldier, I think is really good. And the opener, All Fired Up, I think is terrific, which was a single, I believe. The song that I'm going to pick, though, is Wide Awake in Dreamland. It's the title track, and it's the album closer. So it ends the album with a bang, I think. It's an upbeat song with great vocals, once again, from Pat. And I really enjoy Neil's guitar tone on this song. It's a bit fuzzier than normal. It has more distortion than a lot of their other songs. So I'm going to go with the third verse for this song. Here we go. You were young when you heard the call. Saw it all in your crystal ball and chains. A problem child who can pick and choose. When the Sandman calls your name, you cannot refuse. We'll be right back. All right. So we just heard Wide Awakened Dreamland. And we're going to move on to the eighth studio album titled True Love, which came out on April 9th of 1991. This one was produced by Neil Giraldo and went as high as 37 on the U.S. Billboard charts. So this one goes in a completely different direction, like nothing else that they've done before. Pat ditches the rock pop persona and goes headfirst into swing and jump blues. As much as this isn't necessarily my favorite genre of music, I have to acknowledge the finely done work done across this album. Pat is a natural for this type of music. Her voice lends itself perfectly to this genre. And they assembled an amazing horn section, Roomful of Blues is their name, to complement the main band. The album is chock full of classic covers from great blues and jazz artists like B.B. King, Obie Jesse, Tampa Red, and many others. I can appreciate the earnest nature of this album. Pat and Neil are clearly having a great time on this album, and the musicianship and the craftsmanship, they can clearly be heard. They are pouring their souls into this record. An album that was way ahead of its time. Keep in mind, it was just a few years later that Brian Setzer would set the world on fire with his swing revival record. And that song was a jump, jive, and wail. This is only a couple years after this record. And that type of music, that whole swing music, swing genre came back huge. Well, Pat was way ahead of the curve already, but I guess nobody was listening. There are actually several original compositions from Pat and Neil on this album, and I do want to highlight my favorite, which was titled The Good Life, which was written by Neil and Myron Grombacher. Oh, God. Myron, at the time, was the band's drummer, but ironically, he doesn't play drums in this track. That was left to Roomful of Blues drummer John Rossi. And this is from the second verse. Some remember way back when, waste that time all over again. Talk on about the good life. I gotta say, better days are gonna come.
Good man.
All right, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that one. I know that's not the typical kind of music I play on the ABCs of Rock, but, you know, I think you just got to appreciate the effort put in for that song. You know, it's just really cool that song, this album exists, even if it's not your brand of music. I appreciate the fact that Pat and Neil created this work of art. And I do think it is that. I don't listen to this often, but, you know, congrats for actually making this. It's really cool. Anyways, we are going to move on to the ninth studio album titled Gravity's Rainbow, which came out on May 24th of 1993, and it was produced by Don Gammon, I don't know, and Neil Giraldo. It slipped a lot in the charts. This one went to number 85 on the U.S. Billboard charts. But despite that, I feel this was a real blistering return to form. It does a 180 from the last album. You know, I'm not accusing her of following trends, but I think it's obvious they made a conscious effort to appeal to a broader audience who at the time was eating up the whole, you know, hard rock grunge scene, which was popular around 1993. It's not a grunge album, but you can tell that it was influenced by the scene. At the time, grunge music was absolutely at its peak, and it just so happens that Pat Benatar's next album, which comes out smack dab in the middle of that movement, is probably her hardest rocking sounding album of her career. By far, it's Pat's finest hour, I think, since her early 80s output. It's extremely underrated album, and I recommend checking out songs like You and I, Ties That Bind, and Crazy. And one of the singles that came off this record, I think, was Everybody Lay Down, if anybody remembers that one. But it's the second single that came off of it. Some great music is just scattered. There's just a lot of great music scattered all over this album. But the song that I'm selecting is called Disconnected, and it's an epic. It begins with some light drumming, but then this larger-than-life guitar riff from Neil punches you right in the face. And speaking of Neil, he shreds on this song. It's a real headbanger. How the song wasn't chosen to be a single is a tragedy, because I think at this time, during this era, it would have been a pretty big song. So anyways, great songwriting from Neil, Pat, and Myron, and the new bassist that I think only lasted on this one album, Frank Lynx. I'm going to go with the second verse on this one, so here we go. The jukebox plays a toxic waltz. A factory belches steam. A sidewalk ends in baby steps, and a widow maker screams.
Call your name. All the
All right. That's a great song. I hope you guys like that one, because I think it's truly one of her best songs of her career that really nobody knows about. We're going to move on to the 10th studio album in her catalog, and it's titled Inamorata, which came out on June 3rd of 1997 and was produced by Neil Giraldo. This one came in all the way down at number 171 on the U.S. Billboard charts. What is going on? I don't know. It's also the first time that they switched record labels and moved over to CMC International. I think it was just for this one album. This is full of sweet acoustic ballads with the occasional traditional rock song, but not really enough to swoon me like some of her other albums. But if you're into a more mature sound from Pat and Neil, where they really are creating some beautiful arrangements musically, then this may still be for you. One of the songs I do like is titled River of Love, is a solid song, but that might be my second favorite song. But my favorite one that I'm going to play is At This Time, which was written by Neil and Pat. So Pat shares, I think on this album, co-writing credit on practically every song. So that's kind of cool that she's co-writing on every song in this one. I dig the guitar tone from Neil on this one, which is probably why it resonates with me. There's a little bit of echo and reverb on it, which I find very cool. We're going to go with the second verse on this song. Here it is. Now I'm a girl who believes in destiny, and I suppose I should face reality. The timing's wrong. There's just too many obstacles. To get together now would be impossible.
I'd do anything to see your sweet smile.
That was At This Time from the Inamorata album. All right, got one more to go here before I'm out of here. And it is her last and most recent album titled, in her 11th studio album titled Go, which came out on August 12th of 2003. It was produced by Neil Giraldo. And this one only reached as high as 187. It kept going down lower and lower, which is so unfortunate. This one came out on Bel Chiasso Records. And I think this might be an independent label or one that they put out themselves. And this kind of continues the ping-ponging aspect of how they put out albums, where it's kind of one that's kind of like this hard rock album, and then it's one that's kind of like going off in a different direction. This one kind of brings it back to a more mainstream rock sound, but not entirely. You might think by just looking at the album cover, which has this really great, vivid image of Pat just like front and center screaming, like with her mouth wide open screaming, and you'd think that this is going to be a hard rock album. It's really not that, but it's definitely more familiar territory for her. But there is a lot of variety on this album. The song that I'm going to select from here is the title track, Go, which is technically the second single that was released on this album. It's an amazing hard rock, teetering into metal territory, actually, song, especially with Neil's bag of power chords he whips out. This opens the album strongly, but the album doesn't come close to the heights of the song anywhere else on the record. But I do love this song, and Pat sounds angry and ready for a good fight, and that's my favorite version of her. To this day, it's her last LP, and Pat has expressed that she's not interested in releasing new albums. Over the last couple years, though, she has released a couple of singles, but none of them really have really resonated with me that much. But I think you're going to love this song, and it really does rock. So I love this, and I have listened to this so much over the past couple of weeks. And I haven't really... Here's the other thing. This album, if you are trying to find it online somewhere, like on Spotify or Amazon Music, it's not available digitally anywhere. You have to buy the CD, which is what I had to do. It is that hard to get. But you know what? If you're a completist, go ahead and go get it. Because it's not bad. It's not bad, but I think I'm giving to you the best song for the hard rock Pat Benatar fans out there. So here it is, and this is from the second verse. I got better things I can do, you know, than waste all my time on you. Why don't you just go?
You say. Then wait. different man, but you know that's a lie. The truth is gonna set you free.
Okay, there you have it, my top 10 underrated and underappreciated songs from Pat Benatar. This was so much fun. And if you hadn't guessed, a bit of an education because it's been quite some time since I listened to some of these later era albums. Pat and Neil are constantly touring, and I really hope that someday I'll get a chance to see them in concert when concerts are back full and they're back on the road. I can imagine it would be an incredible show. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. You can send your feedback or hate mail to abcofrockpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for taking this journey with me this season. And please don't hesitate to reach out to me on social media, on Facebook at ABC of Rock Podcast or on Twitter at ABC Rock Podcast. I love getting feedback and messages letting me know what you think of the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here as your host and entertainer over the past hour. I realize that there are literally tens of thousands of podcasts out there that you could be listening to, and I sincerely thank you for spending your time with me on this show. It means the world to me. The ABCs of Rock is part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. Thank you again, and have a great week, everyone.